Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Tonight, we are doing our preview episode for the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers against the Kansas Jayhawks coming up on Saturday. Normally, this is where I would get somebody associated with Coastal Carolina to come and help us preview the game. I was not able to actually find anybody who was available to come on the podcast. So instead, I reached out to friend of the podcast. He's one of our writers over at Rock Chalk Talk, has been kind of helping recently again. Brendan Dorzinski, he's one of the afternoon hosts for 580 Sports Talk over on WIBW 580 AM over in Topeka. Brendan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Andy. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. So thanks for coming on, especially on short notice. This particular game, are you, especially after the first game and kind of the close call they had against Indiana State, are you more excited or are you more worried that this game might potentially be a problem for the Jayhawks?
Oh, it's definitely excitement. I can understand why anybody might be more concerned, because to be quite frank, and you guys went over this already earlier in the week on the podcast, but there were some glaring issues with game one, specifically on the offense. Well, the defense played pretty well, but granted, you have to consider the competition. But all things considered, a lot of it is things that can be coached out. And Miles is, he is who he is. We know who Les Miles is, and we know he's going to be stubborn about some things. There's a reason he won a lot of games, and he can coach out a lot of the issues and get some things back. Carter Stanley is probably not going to fumble three times again in the game. And the biggest reason why, more than anything, to be quite honest, is Puka Williams. And KU didn't have Puka Williams week one, still pulls off a win, as difficult as it was. But you bring back an all Big 12 player, first team as a freshman, bring him back after the week off for the suspension. I mean, KU's offense is that much better instantly. And you take pressure off the quarterback, you take pressure off the other running backs and the receivers. I really do think Puka makes 7 to 14 point difference. I really think it is that much.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that Puka brings a completely new dynamic to the offense. And I think that's kind of the one thing that gets overlooked is, I heard a lot of people nationally talking about, how Kansas was, running it up the middle. And it's funny, when Les Miles is your coach and it's the first game, everybody wants to talk about the game. Even, shows that normally would give Kansas absolutely no attention other than to laugh at them for losing yet again. And everybody seemed to immediately be an expert. I was like, this is the Les Miles offense. Where you just run it up the gut and hope that it works. That's not what we actually saw. I believe it was John Kirby I was listening to earlier this week over on Rock Chalk Sports Talk over in Lawrence. He was talking about all the different formations they use. They use a lot of 21 personnel, 22 personnel, 12 personnel. Like, they use a bunch of different formations, brought a lot of different guys, showed a bunch of different lineups. It ended up with a lot of runs because, this is a very run-heavy offense, kind of like what we expected. But there was enough passing out of that. There was enough different formations that they were giving people a lot of stuff to have to worry about. Bring in Puka, who can hit the home run on any kind of formation that he lines up in, and it completely changes the entire way that they have to handle it. They have to be able to account for, shifting from one type of personnel to another. There's just a lot of additional complexity that gets added there, so I don't know that I'm necessarily too worried about this being the old boring offense. It's just they didn't show a lot. One, I don't think they necessarily had to, but also when you're missing a playmaker that's as dynamic as Puka, you don't really want to try to do everything that you would normally do with him, because he's probably the guy that's been practicing most of the flashy type of things that they would try to do once he comes back.
Well, and I also would like to point out Michael Swain on Twitter. He's one of the writers for 24/7 who covers KU along with a friend of the program, Scott Chasen. And he did a great visual breakdown of the different personnel groupings and the plays that were run out of each of them and how successful or not successful they were. And you're right that there's not, to just say, okay, well, Khalil Herbert that one time ran 3 yards up the middle and got knocked down and, oh, this is Les Miles. I mean, that's extremely reductive. I will go back to the first half of the game. We saw, for lack of a better term, it's a triple option pass. There's an RPO concept right after the snap. Quarterback rolls out, usually to the dominant side. It was the right side for Stanley. Then you've got the option from there to either run or pass. You get three options on the play. How often was Les Miles running that kind of thing at LSU or Oklahoma State before that, for that matter? And certainly nothing we saw previously under the last regime here at KU. So it's reductive to just say that, you know, it's the same old thing. And exactly, you get so many different looks when you've got actually talented guys all over the field. And you bring Puka back out there, and you've got revelations like Dalen Charlotte, which is more just kind of waiting for him to break out. But a true revelation in Andrew Parchment, you've got actual weapons on the outside. You've got the running backs other than Puka. You can give other teams some really unique looks. And I think that's going to be extremely important in this game against Coastal Carolina, because this is a team that is going to be completely out of rhythm. And it's unfortunate. It is largely out of their control. This isn't a particularly good Coastal Carolina team, but I mean, they had to evacuate campus this week, had to move 4 hours west from Conway, South Carolina, because of Hurricane Dorian. And obviously your thoughts go out to them. But I mean, this team is going to be completely out of whack this week. So you throw an offense out there with a more confident quarterback in Carter Stanley, a running back who is one of the best players in the entire Big 12, and competent weapons elsewhere. I mean, that's not easy to defend really for any team, but especially one that's going to be all kinds of out of sorts.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about what the Chanticleers have to deal with this week. And yeah, I mean, I definitely think that that's going to kind of affect what they're doing. We actually had done an interview with a guy over at Underdog Dynasty, our SB Nation site that handles all of the group of five. You know, and he was talking about how this was a team that was expected to be a fairly run-heavy team. You know, that they had a quarterback who could probably pass it some, but he was not expecting it to be a super pass-heavy team. And yet what we saw from them in the first game, for anyone that went back and looked at it, when they played against Eastern Michigan, they were trying to throw it all over the place. The quarterback had all kinds of problems. He threw two touchdowns, but he also had you know, so they were already kind of out of sorts with their offense, not really sure what their offensive identity was going to be. They really probably could have used the extra practice time, you know, not having to do the relocation and all of that, to just kind of iron out all the issues that they were having. Not having that time is going to, I think, hurt them quite a bit. The question is going to be, you know, is this Jayhawk defense going to be able to go ahead and capitalize on that? So I do want to kind of turn it to the defense. They got two turnovers in this last game against Indiana State. I'm wondering how much of that, or do you think it's because the defensive fundamentals are better and they're putting themselves in good position, or was it that Indiana State just kind of messed up on those particular throws?
I think it's a mix of both. The Hassan defense pick six early in the game, I mean, that was a bad read by Ryan Boyle, the quarterback for Indiana State, and a good play by defense, obviously, to make the play and run it back. But that's one of those plays, if you do that, if that happens in Madden, you turn off the game. Like, and everybody has done it a million times. Shouldn't throw the pass, guy is right there, returns it back to the house easily. The one by Jeremiah McCullough, though, in the end zone, I think that was a really nice play, good positioning, smart play, and it shows you some experience in the coaching staff and in the players. And that's where that experience in the secondary comes in. And that's the big thing for me. I have very few concerns, relatively speaking, about the secondary, because I think those guys will make plays. They are experienced. They are veterans. And the data shows, you look back in recent history, distant history, that when you've got returning experience, your production goes up. You get more positive production from those players. And obviously that was the strength for the front line, the front seven last year. You have Daniel Wise, you have Joe Dineen, and before that, the junior season for Dorrance Armstrong in 2017. So you had that kind of production. But everything is flipped now. It's now the secondary where the focus is, and that's what I'm looking for the most. And I'm curious what you might be thinking of this front group, because I see one guy in Drew Prox who I think is a very legit player, and there's a lot of young talent. There's Gavin Potter, who didn't see a whole lot of snaps in the first game, which was surprising to me, or a Stephen Parker as guys who will contribute. And Prox, obviously, he's the new go-to, quote-unquote, quarterback of the defense in the group. But it's the defensive front that concerns me the most, and I think they did a good enough job against Indiana State and obviously held them to just 10 offensive points. But I do have some concerns when they start to face better talent, if that far less experienced group is going to be able to perform at a high enough level that they can take the pressure off of the secondary.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm necessarily too concerned, though, because it wasn't just Prox. It was also Darius Meringue. You know, so they had two guys, sure, one from each level of the defense, that was just wreaking havoc in the backfield, getting tons of pressure. You know, they each had one sack, but they were able to get quite a bit of pressure early in a lot of snap counts or early in the game and really kind of threw the quarterback for Indiana State all, completely off his rhythm. You know, like we talk about some of the mistakes that he made and some of the bad throws he was making, but a lot of that he had a hand in his face. He had guys that were there and you could tell he was feeling pressure all day long. And so I don't know that I'm necessarily too concerned. Yeah, they're not completely stacked with linebackers who can get all over the place and make a bunch of tackles, you know, or guys up front that are going to make it really difficult to open up lanes from the run game. But they have enough guys that can bring pressure, that can disrupt stuff enough. So that way the secondary can do what they're supposed to do and actually make those big plays. And I mean, I think in a league like the Big 12, I think the way that their defense is set up is actually a much better way to do it because yeah, it's nice to get pressure, but when we're as pass happy as we are in the Big 12, there are going to be guys that are going to get people out real quick. You know, they're going to get passes out real quick. They're going to be able to take advantage of the fact that like if what your defense does is bring pressure, they can scheme around that. If instead you have guys, you know, like our cornerbacks are four deep. There was some really good articles talking about how much they rotated guys. You know, Hassan Defense made that interception and then wasn't even in the play for the next drive. Like he didn't play at all on the next drive because they already had a preset rotation. They were already bringing guys in and out, making sure that they stayed fresh. That's going to benefit us a lot, having the secondary that's just so fresh that are able to rotate four to five guys at cornerback and four to five guys at the safety spot. It's going to pay dividends down the road in terms of later in Big 12 play and later in each of the individual games where you can get a decent amount of pressure from the front seven, but you're not going to require them to get tons of pressure immediately up front, you know, to cover up the holes that would be your defensive secondary.
Yeah, no, and that is a good point. And I'm glad you brought up all the different articles we've seen this week about the defensive rotation. And I think that there needs to be a lot of credit. Yeah, obviously, Les Miles is the focal point right now because, I mean, he's Les freaking Miles. But I think a lot needs to be given to the coaching staff as well and the assistants he's hired. Defensive backs, Chivas Jackson, I love this dude. I think he is going to be, I mean, he's a star in the making in the coaching world. And I think everybody already knows that. Just he's a good recruiter. I think he's coached up the group really well. And then on the other side, Emmett Jones offensively. We'll get to the offense more as well. But I like that it's a new look. It is different. And when you have all of those talented guys, all of those strong skill sets out there in the defensive backfield, I mean, that is a positive thing. And when you can be able to rotate, that is my one thing. Whatever level of football it is, if it's high school, if it's college, if it's the pros, if you have enough depth defensively, I think you're going to have a really strong unit. Obviously, talent plays into, which is nice. The secondary has that kind of talent for KU this year. But to be able to have that depth and be able to say, all right, we know we can make a play when it is the starting four on the field, or we know we can make a play when there's only one senior and a bunch of sophomores and juniors out there, that is a really key element, I think. And is, again, you bring up the offenses, the pass-heavy offenses in the Big 12. Those teams will run you ragged constantly, nonstop, every single game, every single week. So to be able to keep guys fresh and rotate them in and out, that's huge. That is going to be absolutely huge when you get to the more competitive games midway through the season.
Yeah, I mean, and I think definitely, you know, you heard a lot of the guys talking about in their press conferences, or, you know, even on like the Miles Ago, that ESPN Plus show, they had a couple quotes in there this week kind of talking about the fact that the guys aren't really looking for individual accolades, especially on the defense. They're all about making sure that the team as a whole is showing out really well, rotating in and out, getting a bunch of guys in there and making sure that the team is the focus and making sure that the team can keep up. Like you were talking about, like having that depth, it's not even necessarily having a bunch of guys that could play. It's about, I think, you know, the especially when you're rotating that much, like the top level guys that you have aren't necessarily as important as trying to keep your overall talent as consistent as possible. And obviously the guys that are more experienced are probably going to play a whole lot better. But if you have, like we have in the secondary, you know, five guys at a position where two of them are playing all the time, but they all have similar skill sets, they all have similar athletic abilities. And the only big difference between them is in terms of experience that the older guys can share with the younger guys, you're going to be very consistent throughout the game. It's going to be difficult for the opposing quarterback to pick on any of your particular guys and look for patterns and find ways to take advantage of you rotating guys in and out. So it's not just about having that top end talent. It's about having enough talent that's all around the same level. You don't see a huge drop off when you're rotating those guys in.
And the big thing I noticed, real quick, I just wanted to add, the thing I noticed about that, the safety play. Because the first time I noticed watching the game from up above was, I thought, okay, Bryce Tornadin is checking in, Mike Lee is checking out. That is strange that you don't have your two best safeties on the field at the same time. That's curious. But there wasn't a huge drop-off in the safety production, and that's huge. Exactly what you said, to not have that kind of fall off, go off a cliff every time one of your starters comes out.
And we actually saw that. Like, there was only one play, I think, from the entire game where I noticed, you know, that there was a huge breakdown in the defensive secondary. And that was on the final touchdown that the one offensive touchdown that Indiana State had.
Yeah.
And it was because the way the scheme was set up, they had everybody playing up tight. They had one high safety. And Indiana State just happened to call a play that had two guys going on big streaks out to the corners. You know, when you have one high safety and everyone else is playing up, that safety can't go with both players. So he picked the wrong one to shadow. They threw it to the other guy for the touchdown. But that was more of a scheme issue and kind of just getting caught unlucky with the way that the routes were going, as opposed to guys not being able to keep up, getting beat over the top or something like that. We saw very few, like, scheme issues, which plagued us all over the place when we had David Beatty. So, you know, I definitely think that that is a huge, huge improvement. All right, I do want to go ahead and jump back or kind of focus a little bit more on what we're expecting to see. But real quick, I do need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so we kind of talked about what we've seen so far. I do want to kind of get focused on this particular game and what we are expecting to see. So first of all, have you had an opportunity to kind of look at what the Chanticleers do and what you're expecting from them in this game coming up?
You know, a little bit. I haven't gotten into the full scout yet. Actually have a preview for WIBW News Now coming up. A little shameless plug there. That should be out on Friday. But a little bit of the tendencies. And again, a little bit of the what we should expect from this team this year coming off a tough week one.
So this particular team, at least coming into the year, what they expected to be the strength of their team was their offensive line. You know, and what I saw in the first game didn't necessarily match up with what I was expecting, but you can kind of shake some of that off and due to, you know, first game jitters. But that is supposed to be their main strength, is their offensive line, being able to open up holes for rushing. They had all kinds of problems running against Eastern Michigan for whatever reason. I don't really know. I didn't actually watch the game, so I'm not really sure if it was a concerted effort to focus on the pass to get that going quickly, or if the run just wasn't working and so they went to the pass a whole bunch. But they had a lot of passing plays. You know, they did quite a bit there to try to get their pass game going for whatever reason. And I don't think that really plays to their strength. So I'm wondering how much they're going to come back to running, especially with all the questions that Kansas has in their defensive front seven. Are you worried about their ability to be able to run the ball come Saturday?
I think that has to be the inherent worry, you know, when that is a team's strength. And I thought this, to go back to the Indiana State game, I thought that they would just pound the ball, because that's a team that's able to move it on the ground well. And I would think Coastal Carolina would go back to the same thing. And for their sake, I mean, again, you consider this is a team that has been able to probably do a whole lot of new install this week, considering all that they're going through off the field and all the different timing issues and just lack of routine they have. I would assume in that situation, any team presented with those circumstances is probably going back to what they know best and what they do best. And that's running the ball. That is using those big guys up front, using those good blockers up front. So I would expect that's going to be the key focus for Coastal Carolina. And again, a less talented team knowing how good the KU secondary is. Now, am I concerned about KU being able to stop it? I want to say slightly less concerned than last week, because again, this is a rebuilding KU team, so it's not like you have to live and die on every single play because you have hopes of the playoff. You know, you can take incremental gains week to week, and I think you saw some of the first game jitters, and the defense had not very many of those. I mean, the front line played really well. We mentioned a couple of those guys already, but I would also like to think that competent coaching probably is going to help that out, and you're going to have, you know, your defensive coordinator, DJ Elliott, or Chivas Jackson, who I was bringing up earlier, you've got guys who know what they're doing and are going to game plan well. And I think that is going to be a big aid for this defense. They know what to expect. They are going to go into this game, unlike under previous regimes, knowing what to expect and what kind of play calls are going to be left out there for them. So I would expect Coastal Carolina to run, but I think KU is going to be keying in on that most of the game and say, we are going to focus on this, and if they go to the air, we're just rely on our seniors and our experienced secondary to make plays when called on.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the only offensive player that kind of concerns me a little bit would be their junior running back, CJ Marable. I believe that's how you say his name, but you know, he led them in rushing. He only got 49 yards. But he also led them in receiving. He got 84 yards on seven catches. You know, so Kansas has had some trouble in the past with the versatile running backs that can play both in the running game and the passing game. I'm wondering if that's going to be an issue, if they're prepared for that type of thing. I have to imagine that they're at least going to know about it and kind of be spying on him. The question is going to be whether they're going to be able to read what type of play he's, you know, getting into in any particular play and what he's setting up for, and are able to kind of shut him down. He's the only consistent threat, I think, from that Coastal Carolina offense. And the quarterback, Fred Payton, is not really a run threat. So it's not like they're having to deal with a dual threat quarterback who will pass it or run it and can beat him with his legs. So as long as they can really keep track of Marable and be ready for him, I think that they'll be okay. The real question just is how focused are they going to be? And I have to think after the close calls they had against Indiana State, they're probably going to be taking this a little bit more seriously than they might have if they had just blown Indiana State out and we're looking ahead to BC next week.
No, I completely agree with you. And I do think confidence plays into this again, and to go back to the intangible stuff, but that's the screen game. You bring up the running back passing game ability. I mean, you can think back to any game over the last decade and see, okay, the screens have killed KU constantly. So being prepared for that, again, going down to the preparation, what are you doing during the week to get ready for this? Do you have good scouting and do you have all of that? And so there's, I think, reason to be confident that is in place and that KU is going to have a good game plan against, like you said, the really only consistently scary threat for this Coastal Carolina offense. And I believe Athlon, if I remember correctly, had Coastal Carolina's quarterbacks group rated right at the bottom of all of college football, FBS, all the way at the bottom, worse than KU's. And Thomas McVitie, at the time, was the assumed starter, was not exactly flying up the charts. But not a whole lot of expectations for this quarterback group. It's just lacking talent. I mean, this is a team that was picked to finish fourth in their division in the Sun Belt. So KU should be able to come out, and physically, we know the roster has its issues. But you should have a good game plan for this. You have to trust your guys to make plays eventually, and you have to trust the coaching staff that they're going to put these guys in a good position. So that's where it comes down to having an assistant like Quan Drake, who knows, this is what we have to do, this is the scouting report. When they're doing this is the tell for a pass, this is the tell for a run, whatever it might be. So to me, the deciding part of that aspect of the game, it all comes down to preparation, because talent-wise, KU will win. I truly believe that, but you need to be well prepared for the different things that offense can give you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and to be honest, like you said, like Coastal Carolina was not expected to be a very good team this year. We kind of were not really caring too much about that, I think, preseason, just because of what has happened in the past. You know, there's been plenty of times where Kansas should have been much better than the team that they played, and had all kinds of issues and were not able to kind of overcome that. But, you know, I think it's a little bit different with Miles. He's preparing them a whole lot better. I mean, I think a lot of that had to do with just the faith that we did not have in David Bailey, given all of the baggage that we had there. You know, I think after this first victory, I think most KU fans are probably more willing to assume that Kansas will perform much more like they are supposed to. And, you know, it's not so much doom and gloom, I think, that I've seen in the last few years. Hopefully that changes quickly, you know, and continues. So I guess for this particular game, moving over to the offense, I don't know that I'm necessarily too concerned about anything on the offense. So instead of talking about biggest keys, I'll ask you, who do you think is going to be the biggest offensive performer? I have to think it's going to be either Puka Williams or Andrew Parchment or Daylon Charlotte. But do you think that one of those guys is going to stand out compared to the others, or do you think it's going to be someone else entirely?
I think Puka does. I mean, it's the easy answer, the obvious answer, but that doesn't mean it's not correct, because he's just so much better than everyone else, if we're being completely frank with it, that talent. And I think the thing I'm very curious about is what the scheme for Puka looks like. Because you have to imagine during fall camp, during offseason workouts, the plan for offensive coordinator Les Kenning and Miles and the quarterbacks group, the game plan was built around Puka Williams. Well, we didn't get to see what that game plan would have looked like in week one, obviously because of the suspension. But I'm curious how different things look. Now, if it's simply a plug-and-play thing and, okay, snaps that would have gone to Khalil Herbert now go to Puka, and Khalil Herbert gets Don Williams' snaps or whatever, then fine, it'll look similar to last week. But I'm curious to see how different it is and what kind of different positioning these guys are going to get when you bring Puka back in. So that's going to be the most interesting thing for me with him specifically. As for the wide receiver group, I'm all in on Andrew Parsons. He's big. He's deceptively fast. He's got that really skinny, tall frame, so he doesn't look fast when he's running. But there's a reason all those jet sweep plays are for him. There's a reason he gets all those touch passes. And I'm very curious to see how this ends up turning out, if he can, you know, do it for a second game in a row, or if he was a one-hit wonder kind of player. So those are the two, again, obvious answers. But that doesn't mean they're the wrong answers. And it comes back to the offensive line, too. I do want to point this out, because we haven't touched on the offensive line yet. The right side of the offensive line was bad against Indiana State. It did not perform particularly well. Obviously, on the left side, Hakeem Adeniji, one of the better offensive linemen in the Big 12, you knew they were going to hold up just fine against Indiana State. I want to see the right side come up and perform better. And that's one of the positions where, or both the guard and tackle, there are question marks in the starting lineup. But I'm curious to see if they're able to take a step forward, if they can get coached up and prepped for this week two game, because frankly, KU is going to need as much help as it can get along that offensive line if it's going to be a run first team throughout the year. So that right side, I think, really needs to be shored up. That might be the key to any of these guys, honestly, being key contributors. How can the offensive line play? Specifically, can the weaker half of the line step up and do enough to keep that running game alive?
Yeah, I mean, I do think, though, that they're, you know, having Puka allows them to do quite a few different things. They can get him involved in a quick screen game a whole lot more. Khalil Herbert, you know, as powerful of a runner as he is and as good of a running back he is, you know, he just cannot do some of the same things that Puka can do. And so if he does, like if Puka just takes Khalil Herbert's carries and we see a similar sort of offense, I think it'd be a waste of bringing Puka back to do that sort of thing. Like, I honestly think that what we saw in the first game was more tailored to the guys that we had available, and that the offense has to change when Puka comes back in, because he can totally do a lot more. And so, but the other thing that kind of has me wondering what's going on, like, I didn't see a whole lot. I went back and looked at the game, and maybe they did it a little bit here and there, but part of the problems that we had with the right side of the offensive line, you know, when they started to wear down in the second half, we didn't bring any additional help in. Like, I was expecting to have some tight ends over there that would help block more, you know, or even bring in like Ben Miles at fullback and like have him sitting over there to help block more, just to find some other ways to protect Carter Stanley. I didn't really see that happen. And I don't know if that was by design, or if they had something else going on and just weren't able to kind of get that taken care of, or, you know, I'm not really sure what it was. I have to imagine that they'll go back and look at the tape, and they'll design a few more things. If they're going to have slower developing passing plays or things like that, they're going to get him some more protection. They're going to find some ways to kind of shore up the right side of that offensive line. The question is going to be, is it going to be enough? And can they get Puka involved, you know, in so many, in enough different areas that it kind of helps out with the right side of that offensive line? Because they're not either not having to go as long to block, or it's going to give enough different looks that the defensive line isn't going to come rushing at them as quickly as they had before. I am curious, though, in terms of, you know, I'm wondering how long it's going to take Puka to get going. I know it didn't take him very long against Central Michigan last year. I do think that that Central Michigan was a worse team last year than this Coastal Carolina team is this year. Now, granted, that's not saying much. Like, I don't think that they're that far off from each other. But I also do think that there's enough other weapons, especially in the passing game, that they may not need Puka to go off as much as he did last year. And so they'll kind of pass it around a little bit more. I actually think that probably the underappreciated star of this offense this year is going to be Daylon Charlotte. You know, I think he was criminally misused by previous regimes. Well, by David Beatty. You know, and the thing that really struck me from David Beatty's offenses is that as much as he said he wanted to get the passing game really going, there was only ever room in his offense for one receiver to really get going. And that happened to be Steven Sims Jr. You know, especially the last couple years. And so what we saw different and what I expect to see different the rest of this year, there is a lot of setup for two different receivers to really get a lot of touches and even the tight end in the passing game. And then they can work in the running game, you know, the running backs into the passing game as well. So I'm excited to see what more they can do. I think it's going to be a neck and neck race between Andrew Parchment and Daylon Charlotte all year long, because I think they're going to actively get both of those guys involved a whole lot more than we've ever seen in the past.
And that'd be the smart game plan. I mean, there's a reason that Daylon Charlotte was a high four-star recruit who went to Alabama, who Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin at the time didn't want to lose to a transfer. And you bring up that he was criminally misused. I don't know how anyone could see differently. And not that that was a unique trend to the David Beatty era. I mean, Jay Sternberger wasn't used in favor of Ben Johnson, and Sternberger is now on IR, but he's in the NFL after 1 year at Texas A&M. So that's not an uncommon or unsurprising thing. But to finally get him in a place where he can be used and can be effective, that is the most important thing. And it's not like he's, you know, only got one thing. He's got quick feet. He's got good hands. He's athletic. The touchdown grab he made to win the game against Indiana State, it was an athletic play. He had a couple of those nice catches, same as Andrew Parchment. So having two guys, like you said, when you only have the one guy, there's only so much you can do. And Steven Sims was a really good player. He made Washington's roster this year as an undrafted rookie, and that's an impressive thing for anybody. But you need to have more than just one weapon in the passing game. And when you've got two legit wide receivers, Andrew Parchment he's going to be a problem. He is going to be a matchup problem, and Daylon Charlotte ideally will be too. Again, the talent is always there, but you know, having him on the bench as a wide receiver, then moving him to safety and then back to wide receiver is just such a mess. But you get him some more consistency, you get him the balls and get him playing time more regularly, I think you're going to see really good things around. I'm in total agreement with you. I said on our radio show right before the season, we were doing our hottest takes for KU as well as K-State at the time. And I said one of my hottest takes, first or second team, all Big 12, Daylon Charlotte at wide receiver. So there's six positions for those all Big 12 teams at the end of the year. And I said Daylon Charlotte gets one. The top three pretty much taken care of with CeeDee Lamb, Tylan Wallace, and Jalen Reagor. But I think he's got the talent undeniably to be that good. Now, will he finish with enough stats? It's hard to say. But he's got the talent to be a constant impact player.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think if he doesn't finish with enough stats, it's going to be because Andrew Parchment takes some of those away from him, because he looks just as dynamic and looks like he's just as talented. All right, I do need to go and throw it to one more quick break. We'll come back and do some predictions, but we'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so we have time for just one more quick segment here. Obviously, you know, this is our preview show, so the very last thing we need to take care of is predictions for the actual game. You don't even necessarily need to do a score if you don't want to, but you're more than welcome to. How do you see the game going? What do you think is going to be kind of the key matchup? And ultimately, how does the game shake out?
I think the key matchup goes back to the one grouping for Coastal Carolina's offense versus KU's defense that we talked about. It's, can KU get enough penetration and enough pressure against the best unit for this Coastal team, the running game, talented running back, talented enough offensive line? Can KU handle that group enough? Because if they can, you win all the other matchups on the field. So that's the biggest matchup for me to watch. But other than that, the key to the game is Puka Williams. It really is that simple, I think. You get him in the mix. You run RPO passes or just RPOs in general with Puka Williams in the game. Well, defenses obviously have to key on him because of the way he can break a game with a single play. But then you've got other options. You bring in two backs, have Khalil Herbert do something on that same kind of play. You've got two talented wide receivers, a tight end who's expected to be a factor in James Sosinski, which, wild that we've gotten to that point, but a positive thing, clearly. So feed him the ball. What can Puka Williams do in this new offense? How are they going to scheme things for him? That's going to be the difference in this game. And frankly, I said it earlier, I think Puka Williams is anywhere from a 7 to 14-point difference against a team like this. I think KU breaks 30 in this game. I really do. I don't see why the defense would be noticeably worse than it was against Indiana State. And I think KU's offense will look a lot better when there's a lot less pressure on Carter Stanley to make plays either with his arm or with his legs throws a lot less pressure on him. Puka Williams can shoulder quite a load. So I'm just very curious to see how he's put into the mix.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. You know, in terms of the unit, it definitely is going to be the KU front seven. Specifically, I think how they can limit that running back that Coastal Carolina has. I don't think it's a matter of whether KU is going to be able to score enough. It's going to be whether Coastal Carolina is able to score enough to keep up with them. KU, like you said, KU is going to score. I do think in terms of the actual key to the game, in terms of like the X factor type of player, is actually going to be Carter Stanley. And while I agree in terms of production, that Puka is probably going to carry the load on that, the real key to the game is going to be whether Carter Stanley is making the right decisions to get the right people involved, you know, to decide when Puka is the one, because there are so many RPOs in this offense, you know, he is actually going to be making decisions in the plays, whether it turns into a run ultimately or a pass. And so the key is going to be, can he make the right decisions to get the right guys in the right situations? You know, basically he needs to be able to feed the ball to the right guys in the right situations for them to be able to produce. I think all of the guys that he would get to produce from that are have the ability and have the skills to do that against a team like Coastal Carolina. It's going to be about whether he makes the right decisions or not. In terms of the guy that produces the most, I do agree. It's going to be Puka, and he's going to be worth a lot of points in this particular game. But ultimately, it's going to come down to is Carter making the right decisions and getting the right guys involved in the right situations for them to be effective. Ultimately, I think he will. You know, I've been high on the bandwagon of Carter should have been the starter for quite a long time, and he was completely mismanaged. I think this is going to be the year where people will find a new appreciation for a guy like Carter Stanley. You know, when he's been asked to step up and make big plays and finish off big drives, he's done that multiple times in the past. You know, against Texas in 2016, the game against Indiana State last week, like he stepped up in a lot of big situations. And I think his ability to continue to do that and make the right choices is going to be huge and critical for this entire season for them.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I was a member of, hashtag starter Stanley, or I stand for Stanley, however you wanted to do it on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I like Carter Stanley as a leader. I like him as, you can use the cliche game manager if you want, because he's not Jalen Hurts or Sam Ellinger out there in terms of ability. He's simply not, but he's a good leader. The guys respond to him, and interviewing players this year, they've told him, we respond to Carter. Carter's a good leader. And having a guy who's just going to be smart and not give away the ball is going to be key. KU cannot give the ball away this year because they're going to have to win on the margin. They're going to have to be smart and stay close in these games. You can't give away possession. So, again, I don't think he's going to fumble three times again, especially three unique fumbles like the one in week one, or the ones in week one. So as long as he can be smart and not give the ball away, make the correct read, know when to give on an RPO or when to pass on an RPO, he's going to be just fine. And I do think the KU offense, while the results may not be great, I do think they're going to grow a lot by having that kind of safe quarterback.
Definitely. All right, Brandon, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Where can the people find you online?
People can find me online on Twitter at BrendanDZW, BrendanDZW. You can also go to 580 Sports Talk on Twitter or WIBWNewsNow.com. And, of course, RockChalkTalk.com as well.
Of course. All right. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out and find us wherever you get your podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much everywhere. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can give us a rating, subscribe, give us a review. If you could, 5 stars, nice comments, all that great stuff. It really does help to get the podcast out there so more people are listening and so we can bring you guys more great content. If you do have any questions, any comments, any suggestions, anyone you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact us by email, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. You know, we do take all of that input and try to incorporate it into the show wherever we can. And really, this is being done for the fans. You know, we are a bunch of fans first, I think, and are doing this to try to help bring a show to the fans that's done by a bunch of fans. So any comments, suggestions you have would definitely be appreciated. But, again, thank you guys so much for listening. Brandon, thank you again for joining me. And we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.